Welcome to the Deep Dive, where
Oh.
we're embarking on a journey through major Eastern philosophies.
Sounds fascinating.
We've got a lot to cover.
I bet.
Taoism, Buddhism, Confucianism, Shinto, Muumism,
Wow.
Hinduism, Jainism, Zoroastrianism, Tenrikyo, and Sikhism.
That's quite a list.
Each offering a unique perspective on life, the universe, and everything.
It's going to be incredible to explore how these philosophies, many of which have been around for centuries, can still provide us with insights into the human experience today.
Exactly.
Like these ideas have withstood the test of time.
Right. Offering wisdom that transcends cultures and generations.
Exactly.
Let's start with a quick overview.
Okay.
Many of these philosophies are tied to specific geographic locations, right?
Absolutely.
Like, where did they come from originally?
So Taoism and Confucianism both originated in China.
Okay.
While Buddhism, Hinduism, and Jainism emerged from India.
Uh-huh.
Shinto is native to Japan.
I see.
Muumism to Korea.
Okay.
And Sikhism developed in the Punjab region of South Asia. Zoroastrianism, on the other hand, has roots in ancient Persia.
Okay.
A lot of different places.
So geographically diverse.
Yeah.
But with some interesting overlaps and influences, I imagine.
Exactly. And it's fascinating to see how these philosophies spread and interacted with each other over time.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Buddhism, originating in India,
okay,
eventually became a major religion in East Asia,
okay,
influencing and being influenced by the existing philosophies in those regions.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay, let's dive into a specific philosophy now.
Sure.
How about Taoism?
Okay.
What's the deal with the Tao?
The Tao.
And how does it relate to living a good life?
It's often described as the underlying principle of the universe, the force that flows through all things.
Okay.
It's a bit tricky to grasp.
Yeah.
Because it's not something you can see or touch.
I see.
More like a universal energy or a natural order.
So kind of like a cosmic operating system.
Yeah.
But way more mystical.
Definitely more mystical.
Okay, but how do you actually live in accordance with this invisible Tao?
Taoism emphasizes living in harmony with the Tao.
Okay.
Going with the flow of the universe rather than resisting it.
Uh-huh.
This is where the concept of Wu Wei comes in.
Wu Wei.
Often translated as non-action.
Okay.
Or effortless action.
I've always found Wu Wei to be a bit of a paradox.
A paradox.
How can you achieve something by doing nothing?
It's not about being passive.
Okay.
But rather about acting in a way that is aligned with the natural order.
Interesting.
Imagine a skilled martial artist who effortlessly deflects an opponent's attack.
Okay.
They're not forcing anything, just moving with the energy of the situation.
Ah, so it's more about aligning your actions with the natural flow of things.
Exactly.
Finding that sweet spot where effortlessness meets effectiveness.
Yeah.
Got it.
It's like when you're sailing and you catch the wind just right.
Uh-huh.
You're not fighting against the elements, but rather working with them, allowing the wind to propel you forward.
I can see how that would apply to so many aspects of life.
Yeah.
From personal relationships to creative endeavors.
Absolutely.
But Taoism isn't all about flowing and effortlessness, right?
No, not entirely.
What about the concept of yin and yang?
Yin and yang are fundamental to Taoist thought.
Okay.
Representing the interconnectedness and interplay of seemingly opposite forces in the universe. Light and dark.
Uh-huh.
Masculine and feminine.
Interesting.
Active and receptive.
So it's not about one force being better than the other.
No, not at all.
But rather about finding a balance between them.
Precisely.
Okay.
Yin and yang are complementary forces that create harmony when in balance.
Uh-huh.
Too much of one creates disharmony.
Got it.
Just like in nature, where too much sun or too much rain can disrupt the balance of an ecosystem.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's shift gears a bit and talk about Buddhism.
Okay.
What was it about the Buddha's message that resonated with so many people?
The Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama, offered a path to liberation from suffering, something universally relatable.
Huh?
He started his journey as a prince.
Okay.
Shielded from the hardships of life.
I see.
But once he encountered the realities of suffering, old age, sickness, death.
Oh, wow.
He dedicated his life to finding a way out.
That's interesting. He could have continued living a life of luxury.
Right.
But instead, he chose to confront the reality of suffering head on.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And his insights led him to the Four Noble Truths.
Four Noble Truths.
Which form the foundation of Buddhist thought.
Okay, let's break those down.
Okay.
The first is that life inevitably involves suffering,
Yes, the first noble truth acknowledges the reality of suffering.
Okay.
The second noble truth goes a step further,
Yeah.
stating that the root cause of suffering is attachment and craving,
Attachment and craving.
clinging to things that are impermanent.
So it's not just about the external circumstances of life,
No.
but also about our internal reactions to them.
Exactly. The third noble truth offers hope,
Oh.
stating that suffering can cease.
Okay.
And the fourth noble truth lays out a path.
Okay, the Eightfold Path.
The Eightfold Path to
Phew.
achieve that cessation.
So Buddhism isn't just about acknowledging suffering.
No, it's not.
It's about offering a way to overcome it.
Precisely.
I see.
The Eightfold Path, which includes right understanding, right intention, right speech, and so on, provides a practical framework for cultivating wisdom, ethical conduct, and mental discipline.
And one of the key practices within Buddhism is mindfulness, right?
Yes.
It seems to be incredibly popular these days,
It is.
even among people who aren't Buddhist.
Absolutely.
What is mindfulness?
Mindfulness, or sati,
Asati.
involves paying attention to the present moment without judgment. It's a practice that helps us become more aware of our thoughts, feelings, and sensations without getting carried away by them.
So it's a way to step back from the constant chatter of the mind and just
Exactly.
be present with what is. I can see how that would be helpful.
And this awareness can be cultivated through meditation,
Okay.
but it can also be integrated into everyday activities.
That's good.
Yeah.
I've tried some mindfulness exercises myself,
Oh, great.
and I can see how they can be helpful in managing stress and anxiety.
Yes,
It's
definitely.
like creating a space between yourself and your reactions, giving you more choice in how you respond to things.
You've hit the nail on the head.
Okay.
Mindfulness helps us become less reactive and more intentional in our thoughts, words, and actions.
Okay, let's move on to Confucianism.
Okay.
I know it's often associated with social harmony and ethical conduct.
It is.
Can you elaborate on that a bit?
Confucianism, developed from the teachings of Confucius,
Okay.
emphasizes creating a harmonious society through cultivating virtuous individuals.
Okay.
It's very much a philosophy of social responsibility and ethical living.
So it's not just about personal enlightenment.
Yeah.
It's about creating a better world through right action and right relationships.
Exactly. Confucianism emphasizes five key virtues:
Five key virtues.
benevolence, righteousness, propriety,
Huh?
wisdom, and trustworthiness
I see.
as essential for both individual and societal well-being.
And these virtues are not just abstract ideals.
Right.
They have practical applications in everyday life.
Absolutely.
Like
For example, filial piety,
filial piety.
the respect and care for one's parents and elders,
Okay.
is considered fundamental to a well-functioning society. Confucianism also stresses the importance of education and self-cultivation as means to become better individuals and contribute to a harmonious society.
So there's a strong emphasis on learning and personal growth,
Yes.
not just for individual gain,
No.
but for the betterment of society as a whole.
Precisely.
That's great.
Confucius believed that through education and self-reflection, individuals could cultivate their moral character
Okay.
and become exemplary citizens who contribute to a just and harmonious society.
Now let's talk about Shin,
Okay.
which I know is deeply rooted in Japanese culture.
It is.
I was just curious about the concept of kami.
Kami.
What exactly are they?
They are spirits or deities
Okay.
that are believed to inhabit all things,
All things.
natural phenomena like mountains and rivers, ancestral spirits,
Okay.
even objects.
Wow.
Shinto is deeply animistic,
Okay.
seeing the divine in all aspects of nature and life.
So it's a very different worldview from the Western concept of a single transcendent God.
Indeed,
I see.
Shinto is polytheistic,
Polytheistic.
acknowledging a multitude of kami,
Okay.
each with their own specific domain and powers.
And what's the relationship between humans and kami?
It's a bit of both.
Okay.
Shinto involves rituals and practices aimed at honoring and appeasing the kami,
Okay.
seeking their blessings and guidance.
What kind of ritual?
Or what?
I'm picturing those beautiful Shinto shrines
Yeah.
with their distinctive architecture and serene atmosphere.
Shinto shrines are sacred spaces dedicated to specific kami.
People visit them to make offerings,
Okay.
pray for blessings,
I see.
and participate in festivals and ceremonies.
Well, right.
Purity is an important element in Shinto,
Okay.
and many rituals involve purification practices.
It sounds like a very aesthetically rich tradition,
It is.
deeply connected to the natural world.
Absolutely.
Okay, now let's delve into Muthiism,
Okay.
Korean shamanism.
All right.
What distinguishes it from other forms of shamanism?
Muduism, like other shamanistic traditions, involves communicating with the spirit world, but it has its own unique characteristics rooted in Korean culture and history.
So you have these shamans,
yeah.
or mudong, as they are called in Korea, who act as intermediaries between the human and spirit realms.
Exactly.
Got it.
Mudong can be male or female.
Okay.
And are believed to have been chosen by the spirits.
Interesting.
They perform rituals for healing, divination, and guiding souls to the afterlife.
Wow. Sounds like a very powerful role.
It is bridging the gap between the seen and unseen worlds.
Right.
What sorts of rituals do they perform?
Mudong perform a variety of rituals, often involving drumming, chanting, and trance states to communicate with the spirits.
Okay.
One prominent type of ritual is called a gut.
A gut?
Which can be a large, elaborate ceremony involving music, dance, and offerings to the spirits.
So it sounds like these rituals are not just about personal spiritual experiences.
Right.
They also serve a social function.
Yes.
Bringing the community together.
You're right.
Okay.
Gut ceremonies can be performed for various purposes.
Uh-huh.
From healing individuals to ensuring good harvests.
Wow.
And they often involve active participation from the community.
Now on to Hinduism.
Okay.
I know it's one of the world's oldest religions and incredibly diverse.
It is.
But are there some core concepts that tie it all together?
Hinduism is a tapestry of beliefs, practices, and philosophical schools.
Okay.
But some core ideas run through it.
Like,
the concept of dharma, often translated as duty or righteous conduct, is central to Hindu thought.
So dharma is about fulfilling one's purpose in life.
Exactly.
Living in accordance with cosmic order.
Yes.
Okay.
And dharma is not a fixed set of rules.
Okay.
But rather a dynamic principle that varies depending on one's social position, stage of life, and individual circumstances.
Wow. So complex.
It's about aligning one's actions with one's true nature and purpose.
And how does the concept of karma fit into all of this?
Karma.
Yeah.
The law of cause and effect is closely tied to dharma.
Okay.
It suggests that our actions have consequences.
I see.
Not just in this life, but also in future lifetimes.
So it's a powerful reminder to be mindful of our actions and their impact.
Yes.
Knowing that what we sow is what we reap.
Precisely.
Okay.
Karma encourages ethical conduct and reminds us that we are responsible for shaping our own destiny through our thoughts, words, and deeds.
Okay. I'm starting to see how these different concepts interweave and build upon each other within the Hindu worldview.
Yeah.
Now, what about Jainism?
Okay.
I understand it's known for its extreme emphasis on nonviolence.
Ahimsa.
Nonviolence.
Nonviolence is the cornerstone of Jain ethics.
Okay.
It goes beyond simply avoiding harming others.
Oh, wow.
It's about extending compassion and respect to all living beings, no matter how small or seemingly insignificant.
Wow, that's a radical commitment.
It is.
What does that look like in practice?
Jains are strict vegetarians.
Uh-huh.
And many go to great lengths to avoid harming even insects.
Okay.
Some wear face masks to prevent accidentally inhaling small creatures.
Wow.
And they sweep the ground ahead of them to avoid stepping on insects.
That's incredible.
It is.
It makes you really think about the interconnectedness of all life.
Yes.
And how even our smallest actions can have an impact.
Exactly.
Wow.
Jainism recognizes the inherent worth and dignity of all living beings, emphasizing that even the tiniest creature possesses a soul.
It's a powerful message.
It is.
Reminding us to be more mindful of our impact on the world around us.
Absolutely.
And this reverence for life extends beyond physical harm.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Jains strive to cultivate purity in thought, word, and deed.
Interesting.
Believing that negative thoughts and intentions can also create harm.
It's interesting to see how Jainism takes the concept of nonviolence to such an extreme.
It does.
Highlighting its ethical and spiritual significance.
Yeah, white.
And this commitment to nonviolence is closely tied to the Jain concept of karma.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
They believe that harming any living being, even unintentionally, creates negative karma that binds us to the cycle of birth and death.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So Jainism is not just about abstaining from violence.
Yeah.
It's about pursuing a path of spiritual liberation through ethical conduct and minimizing harm in all aspects of life.
He's got it. And it's this rigorous commitment to nonviolence that makes Jainism such a unique and thought-provoking philosophy.
Now, shifting gears to Zoroastrianism.
Okay.
It has this intriguing concept of a cosmic battle between good and evil.
It does.
Can you tell me more about that?
Zoroastrianism,
okay,
founded by the prophet Zoroaster in ancient Persia,
right,
is one of the world's oldest monotheistic religions.
Oh, wow.
It centers on the worship of Ahura Mazda,
Heifer,
the god of wisdom and goodness,
right,
who is locked in an eternal struggle with Angra Menu, the embodiment of evil.
So it's a dualistic worldview.
It is.
Where good and evil are seen as fundamental forces in the universe.
Exactly.
That's pretty intense.
And Zoroaster taught that humans have free will.
Okay.
And must choose which side to align with.
I see.
This choice is not just a personal matter.
Here.
It has cosmic significance.
Oh, wow.
Influencing the balance between good and evil in the universe.
Wow, that's a lot of pressure. So every action we take is part of this larger cosmic battle.
In a way, yes.
Okay.
Zoroastrianism emphasizes ethical conduct, believing that good thoughts, good words, and good deeds strengthen the forces of good.
I see.
While negative thoughts and actions empower evil.
It's a powerful reminder that our choices matter.
They do.
Not just for ourselves, but for the world around us.
Exactly.
And Zoroastrianism also has a unique view of the afterlife.
It does.
Where souls are judged based on their deeds in life.
Yes.
The righteous cross over to paradise.
Uh-huh.
While the wicked are punished. It's a strong incentive for ethical living.
It is.
Wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
And now for Tenrikyo.
Okay.
It's a relatively new religion, isn't it?
Yes. It was founded in 19th century Japan.
Okay.
By Miki Nakayama. Who is revered as Oyasama.
Oyasama.
Meaning parent. By Tenrikyo followers.
And what makes Tenrikyo unique among these Eastern philosophies?
Tenrikyo emphasizes joy, gratitude, and selfless service.
Oh, interesting.
It teaches that god,
okay,
whom they refer to as Tsukihi, meaning moon sun, created humans to experience joy.
Okay.
And that suffering arises when we stray from this divine purpose.
So it's about aligning our lives with God's intention for us.
Exactly.
Which is to live joyfully and contribute to the well-being of others.
Yes.
I see.
Tenrikyo has a practice called Hinokishin, which means joyous service, where followers engage in selfless acts to express gratitude to God and spread joy to others.
It's a beautiful concept.
It is.
Finding joy through serving others and making a positive impact on the world.
Exactly.
Okay, last but not least,
all right,
let's explore Sikhism.
Okay.
I know it emphasizes equality and service.
It does.
Can you tell me more about that?
Sikhism.
Okay.
Founded by Guru Nanak. In the Punjab region of India,
uh-huh,
is a monotheistic religion.
Okay.
That stresses the oneness of God,
uh-huh,
and the equality of all human beings.
So it rejects the caste system and other forms of social hierarchy.
Absolutely.
That were prevalent in India at the time.
Yes.
Guru Nanak taught that all people are equal in the eyes of God.
He did.
Regardless of their caste, creed, gender, or social status.
Right.
And this commitment to equality is reflected in Sikh practices, right?
Yes.
Like what?
For instance, the langar.
A langar.
The communal kitchen found in every gurdwara.
Okay.
Sikh temple.
Okay.
Provides free meals to anyone.
Oh, wow.
Regardless of their background.
It's a powerful symbol of social justice and the rejection of hierarchy.
It is.
Putting belief into action.
Exactly.
It's great.
And selfless service, or seva, is a core principle in Sikhism.
Okay.
It's about contributing to the well-being of others and the community,
mm-hmm,
seeing service as a form of devotion to God.
So Sikhism emphasizes both inner spiritual development and outer action in the world.
You've got it.
This has been an incredible overview of these 10 Eastern philosophies.
And
it's remarkable how each offers unique insights into life, the universe, and everything.
It's amazing how these ideas developed centuries ago can still be so relevant today.
I'm eager to dive deeper into some of these philosophies in the next part of our deep dive.
Okay.
We've only just scratched the surface, but I'm already feeling inspired by the wisdom and depth of these traditions.
Me too.
I am too.
I'm looking forward to exploring the nuances and practical applications of these philosophies in more detail.
Absolutely.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Oh, hey.
We've just begun to explore the vast and intricate world of Eastern philosophies.
It really is a lot.
And I'm excited to delve deeper into some specific concepts and practices,
okay,
that stood out to me. What really struck you during our initial overview?
One thing that keeps coming to mind,
yeah,
is this idea of living in harmony with the universe.
Oh, yeah.
A theme that seems to run through many of these philosophers.
Absolutely. It's
yeah,
this idea of aligning ourselves with the natural order of things.
Right.
Rather than trying to force our will upon the world.
Okay.
We touched on this in Taoism with the concept of Wu Wei.
Wu Wei.
But it also shows up in other traditions.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps in different forms.
Like in what?
Like in Buddhism.
Like
where the idea of letting go of attachments and accepting impermanence seems to be a way of harmonizing with the ever-changing nature of reality.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Buddhism encourages us to see the impermanent nature of all things.
Yeah.
Not as a source of anxiety, but rather as a liberating truth.
Oh, interesting.
By letting go of our clinging to things that are constantly changing, we can find peace and freedom.
So it's about going with the flow.
In a way, yeah.
Not resisting what is.
Right. And this pursuit of harmony extends beyond our individual lives.
Mm-hmm.
Confucianism, for instance,
emphasizes
creating a harmonious society through cultivating virtuous individuals and fostering right relationships.
So it's not just about personal enlightenment.
No.
It's about creating a ripple effect that positively impacts the world around us.
Precisely. Yeah. Confucianism highlights the interconnectedness of individuals and society, suggesting that by cultivating virtues like benevolence, righteousness, and propriety, we not only improve ourselves, but also contribute to a more just and harmonious social order.
Okay. And this idea of interconnectedness seems to be echoed in the animistic worldview of Shinto.
Shinto,
where everything in nature, from mountains and rivers to trees and rocks, is seen as imbued with spirit.
Right.
With kami.
Yes.
Okay.
Shinto beautifully illustrates this sense of reverence for the natural world and the interconnectedness of all beings.
It's not about dominating nature.
No.
It's about coexisting with it.
Exactly.
Recognizing the divine essence that flows through all things.
Yeah, it's a beautiful way to look at it.
It makes you think twice about how we treat the environment, doesn't it?
It really does.
If everything is imbued with spirit, then harming nature is not just a physical act.
Right.
It's a spiritual transgression.
That's a powerful insight.
Right.
Shinto reminds us that we are part of nature, not separate from it.
Okay.
And that our actions have consequences that extend beyond the immediate physical realm.
Okay. Let's shift gears a bit.
Okay.
And explore some of the ethical principles that stood out in these Eastern philosophies.
Okay.
I'm thinking about the Jain concept of ahimsa.
Ahimsa.
Nonviolence.
Right.
Which seems incredibly radical in its commitment to minimizing harm.
Ahimsa is truly at the heart of Jainism.
Yes.
It's not just about abstaining from physical violence. It extends to thoughts, words, and even intentions.
Wow.
Jains believe that every living being, no matter how small, possesses a soul and is worthy of respect and compassion.
So it's about cultivating a deep sense of reverence for all life.
Exactly.
Recognizing the interconnectedness of all beings.
Yes. And this awareness leads to a way of life that seeks to minimize harm in all its forms.
Okay.
As we mentioned earlier, many Jains are strict vegetarians, and some go to great lengths to avoid even accidentally harming insects.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah.
It makes you appreciate the depth of their ethical commitment, doesn't it?
It really does.
It's a challenge to our often anthropocentric worldview, reminding us that humans are not the only beings with inherent worth.
You've hit the nail on the head.
Huh?
Jainism offers a powerful critique of our human-centered perspective, urging us to expand our circle of compassion to include all living creatures.
Now, while ahimsa is a central tenet of Jainism, the concept of karma, which we touched upon earlier in the context of Hinduism, seems to play a significant role in many of these Eastern philosophies, albeit with some variations.
Right.
So what is karma?
The idea of karma, the law of cause and effect, runs through many Eastern traditions, suggesting that our actions have consequences that shape our present and future lives.
Okay.
It's not about punishment or reward, but rather about understanding that our choices have an impact, both on ourselves and on the world around us.
So it's a call to ethical conduct.
It is.
Recognizing that our actions create ripples that extend outward.
Exactly.
Got it.
Karma encourages us to be more mindful of our thoughts, words, and deeds, knowing that they have consequences that will ultimately come back to us.
Okay. And this idea of actions having consequences also plays out in Zoroastrianism.
Zoroastrianism.
Where the choice between good and evil is not just a personal matter, but a cosmic one.
It is.
Affecting the balance between these forces in the universe.
Right. Zoroastrianism takes this ethical responsibility to another level by suggesting that we are active participants in this cosmic battle between good and evil.
Wow. It's almost like we're all superheroes fighting for the fate of the universe with every choice we make.
That's a fun way to think about it.
Yeah.
Zoroastrianism does present a rather dramatic worldview.
Okay.
But it also underscores the significance of our ethical choices.
Now, another concept that caught my attention was the Sikh emphasis on seva.
Seva.
Selfless service.
Yes.
It seems to go beyond just doing good deeds.
It does.
It's about cultivating an attitude of service as a way of life.
Seva is truly at the heart of Sikhism.
Uh-huh.
It's about recognizing the divine spark in all beings and expressing our devotion to God through acts of selfless service to others.
So it's not just about doing good things.
No.
It's about doing them with a particular intention.
Exactly.
With a spirit of love and devotion.
Yes. Seva is not about seeking recognition or reward, but rather about offering ourselves in service to others, seeing it as a way to connect with the divine.
It's a beautiful concept.
It is.
And it reminds me of the Tenrikyo practice of Hinokichin.
Hinokichin.
Joyful service.
Yeah.
Where selfless acts are performed as a way of expressing gratitude to God.
That's a great connection.
Right. It's similar.
Both seva and hinokichin highlight the transformative power of selfless service.
Yeah.
Not just for the recipient, but also for the giver.
Okay. And these practices remind us that true spirituality is not just about personal enlightenment.
Right.
It's about expressing our compassion.
Yes.
And making a positive impact on the world.
Absolutely.
Okay.
They highlight the interconnectedness of our spiritual journeys and our actions in the world.
Now, as we're exploring these ethical principles, I'm also curious about how these different philosophies approach the concept of suffering.
Suffering.
Buddhism, for instance.
Yeah, Buddhism.
Places a lot of emphasis on understanding and overcoming suffering.
Yes. The Buddhist teachings center around the Four Noble Truths.
The Four Noble Truths.
Which, as we discussed earlier,
acknowledge
the reality of suffering and offer a path to liberation from it.
Okay.
Buddhism recognizes that suffering is an inherent part of the human experience. But it doesn't leave us stuck there.
Yeah.
It provides practices and insights to help us navigate suffering and ultimately transcend it.
So it's not about denying or avoiding suffering.
No.
It's about facing it head on.
Exactly.
And finding a way through it.
Yes.
Okay.
Buddhism offers a path of transformation.
Okay.
Where we can move from a state of suffering to a state of liberation.
Right.
Not by changing external circumstances.
Okay.
But by changing our relationship to them.
And this idea of transformation.
Yeah.
Of moving beyond our current state of being.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to resonate with other philosophies as well.
You're absolutely right. Many of these Eastern traditions emphasize the possibility of spiritual growth and evolution.
I see.
Whether it's the Taoist journey of aligning with the Tao, the Buddhist path to enlightenment, or the Hindu pursuit of moksha, liberation from the cycle of birth and death.
Okay.
There's this overarching theme of transcendence,
of
moving beyond our limited sense of self and connecting with something larger.
It's inspiring to think about, isn't it?
It really is.
That we have the potential to evolve and grow beyond our current limitations.
Yeah.
And connect with a deeper reality.
Indeed.
Okay.
And these Eastern philosophies offer a roadmap, so to speak, for navigating this journey of transformation.
I see.
They provide practices, insights, and ethical frameworks that can help us live more meaningful, fulfilling, and compassionate lives.
This deep dive has been incredibly insightful so far.
It has.
I'm starting to see the connections between these seemingly disparate philosophies.
Yeah.
And how they offer different perspectives on some of life's big questions.
Me too.
Okay.
And I'm curious to see what other insights emerge.
Yeah.
As we continue our exploration.
Okay.
I'm especially interested in delving into the practical applications of these philosophies.
Oh.
How we can integrate their wisdom into our daily lives.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Let's pick up there the next part of our deep dive.
Okay.
Welcome back to the deep dive.
Oh, hi again.
As we wrap up our exploration of major Eastern philosophies.
Okay.
I'm struck by how much practical wisdom these traditions offer.
Yeah.
despite originating centuries ago, in vastly different cultural contexts.
It's a testament to the enduring relevance of these ideas, and I think that's what makes them so fascinating.
Okay.
They speak to fundamental human experiences and aspirations, offering insights into how to live a more meaningful and fulfilling life.
Exactly. And in the last part, you mentioned exploring the practical applications of these philosophies. Where do we even begin?
That's a good question.
There's so much richness and depth to these traditions.
Well, one thing that resonates with me is how many of these philosophies emphasize self-cultivation.
Self-cultivation.
The idea that we can actively work towards becoming better versions of ourselves.
Right, like in Confucianism.
Confucianism, yeah.
Where the focus is on developing virtues, such as benevolence, righteousness, and wisdom.
Yes.
Not just for personal gain, but for the betterment of society.
Exactly.
Okay.
And this idea of self-cultivation also shows up in Buddhism.
Buddhism, yeah.
Where the Eightfold Path provides a framework for cultivating ethical conduct.
Okay.
Mental discipline and wisdom.
And in Taoism, it's about aligning oneself with a Tao.
The Tao.
Cultivating virtues like humility, simplicity, and non-attachment.
Precisely.
So many different ways to think about this.
Each tradition offers its own unique set of practices and principles, but they all share this common thread of actively working towards personal growth and transformation.
So it's not just about accepting who we are, but about striving to become more compassionate, wise, and virtuous individual.
You got it.
Got it.
And this process of self-cultivation is not seen as a selfish pursuit.
Okay.
It's understood to have a ripple effect on the world around us.
Right. Like that saying, be the change you want to see in the world.
Exactly.
Right.
And that sentiment aligns beautifully with the emphasis on service that we see in philosophies like Sikhism. And Tenrikyo. Remember Seva and Hinokishin?
Absolutely.
Those practices highlight the transformative power of selfless service.
Yes.
Both for the giver and the receiver.
But
it's about putting compassion into action.
No.
Recognizing the interconnectedness of all beings.
And that sense of interconnectedness is a recurring theme throughout many of these Eastern philosophies, isn't it?
It is.
Whether it's the Taoist concept of the interconnectedness of all things, the Buddhist understanding of dependent origination, or the Shinto reverence for the spirits that inhabit all of nature.
Yeah.
There's this recognition that we are part of a larger web of life, not separate entities.
And this awareness, I think, is crucial in today's world, where we're facing global challenges that require collective action and a sense of shared responsibility.
It makes you realize that our individual choices and actions have an impact.
They do.
That extends beyond ourselves, influencing the well-being of others and the planet as a whole.
Exactly. Okay. It challenges us to think beyond our own immediate needs and desires.
Okay.
And consider the interconnectedness of all life.
Now, another practical application that struck me was the emphasis on mindfulness.
Mindfulness.
Particularly in Buddhism,
but
also present in other traditions.
Right.
In our fast-paced, technology-driven world, it's so easy to get caught up in the constant stream of thoughts and distractions.
Yeah. Mindfulness practices, like meditation,
can
help us cultivate a sense of presence and awareness.
Oh.
Allowing us to step back from that mental chatter and experience the world with greater clarity and peace.
It's like hitting the pause button on autopilot.
Yeah.
And becoming more intentional
Yeah.
about how we're experiencing and responding to life.
Exactly. And this awareness can be incredibly helpful in managing stress, cultivating compassion, and making more conscious choices.
And speaking of choices.
Choices.
The concept of karma. Which we discussed earlier, is a powerful reminder that our actions have consequences.
Karma is not about some cosmic scorecard keeping track of our good and bad deeds. It's more about understanding that our choices create ripples, both positive and negative, that shape our experiences and the world around us.
So it encourages us to act with greater mindfulness and intention.
It does.
Knowing that what we put out into the world will ultimately come back to us.
Precisely.
You know, as we wrap up this deep dive, I'm left with a sense of gratitude.
Me too.
For the wisdom and depth of these Eastern philosophies.
It's been a privilege to explore these rich and diverse traditions together.
It has.
And I hope our listeners have found it as enriching and thought-provoking as we have.
I think one of the biggest takeaways for me is that these philosophies offer a wealth of practical guidance for navigating the complexities of life.
It's true.
From cultivating inner peace and compassion to fostering harmonious relationships and making ethical choices.
Absolutely.
Okay.
They remind us that spirituality is not just about abstract beliefs or rituals.
Right.
It's about how we live our lives,
uh-huh.
how we treat ourselves and others,
okay.
and how we contribute to the well-being of the world.
And while each tradition offers its own unique path,
yes.
they all share this common thread of encouraging us to live more consciously,
uh-huh.
compassionately, and connected to something larger than ourselves.
Beautifully said.
Right.
I like that.
And perhaps that's the most valuable takeaway of all.
Yeah.
This invitation to live with greater intention, mm-hmm. awareness, and compassion, recognizing the interconnectedness of all things.
What a powerful and inspiring thought to leave our listeners with.
It is.
Until next time, fellow knowledge seekers, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep into the vast ocean of wisdom that the world has to offer.
Great advice.